This is Jan Cox, talk number 795, recorded on March 27th, 1991.
Near the local pond, on which I was going to try and take us verbally skating this evening, is another spot that might prove profitable to visit. It's not unrelated to what I had in mind of us waltzing about this evening. Since we started taping these and having these shows broadcast around the country, we have received comments, and it's certainly not singular to this. I was just starting off using this as an example, but we've received comments supporting, comments attacking our use of, and I will just go ahead and tell you its quotes because this is one of the common words used, both supporting, bravoing, and attacking our use of sarcasm, ridicule, and even though we're going to take this into broader areas, may I point out for a moment that this kind of activity certainly requires no explanation or justification, even if it was possible. And oftentimes, almost as close as I care to come, get apologetic on the tape for stopping and continuing to point out some example that I was about to use. To say, this is no attack, this is no sarcasm, this is no way cynical. I must do that, what? Very often. Even though I would not be doing it if it was just some group of us talking. It's still on the basis that someone might be tuning this in somewhere at some other time, some other place, some other universe, and just a little reminder. But surely on almost every tape I do that. But let me say in general, why I use the term as close as I cared to apologizing for him to do it is simply on the basis that this kind of activity cannot explain what it is. And it certainly can't be justified. It's not to me, it's not to anybody. And there is some validity outside of just this and to everything. But as long as I start out with what appeared to be a hardwired example of the comments we got in response to this kind of show that we've been having broadcast, that it requires, there's just no way to justify, there's no way to explain, there's nothing to apologize. But since it is somewhat related in a way that might help some of you focus your attention, I will go ahead and point out just quite plainly that nothing that is said here is in any way, not even in the teeniest, weeniest little bit. It is not sarcastic. It is not cynical. It is no form of mockery. And it is certainly has not even an iota of any hostility. Not toward anyone, any group, any institution, any idea. That about covers it. It just does not. Is why I almost say that it's apologetic for me at times to even stop and say, well, what I'm about to say, to use some example or to pull in somebody else's comment or the attitude that's prevailing in some area of humanity, and for me to say, now, this is not sarcastic and it's no attack, but it's you. If you're going to talk at all about matters extraordinaire, if you're going to talk about the background that's driving life, you've got to start off and talk about the shadows, talk about that which ordinary people can see, or we couldn't even start a sentence. And so it is no justification. I'm just, we'll say flatly, maybe we'll do it again, but just plainly. I mean, there's no condition to it. That nothing that's said here has even one teeny bit. Not any. It's nothing to apologize, there's nothing to cover up. There's just not any. There's no sarcasm, no cynicism. There is no form of aggression, of hostility, of criticism, ridicule, mockery. Of course, hostility covers it. None. None, none. There is one little interesting part. Could I see if you want to make note of, those of you that may have seen these programs for several times. very often, very, very often, I will be talking, and I will suddenly take on the role, and I'll point out to you that I'll say something such as, well, ordinary thinking, ordinary intelligence might have this to say in regards to what I just said. You know, and I'll sometimes point to me, or I say, now I'm playing ordinary intelligence. And I will speak for just general prevailing intelligence. And then sometimes I'll go back and I'll speak to me for me. And so you'd notice, in a way, I will be, in a most innocuous way, somewhat engaging in burlesque or satire, but with no hostility. But what I was going to ask you to note is, if you weren't listening correctly, you could take, if you're an ordinary person, and the kind who would write in and either thank me or attack me for the use of sarcasm, as you call it, you could quite easily, catch this, reverse what I did, and unknowingly, you take the innocuous satire, or me playing the innocuous part of humanity, and take that as being the real stuff all of a sudden, and then take my specific comments as being the satire. Think about that, those of you that can follow that. It was fairly simple, actually. Then instead of me saying whatever it is I'm saying, not right or wrong, that I make some comment and say, well, now from ordinary attitudes, I could play ordinary intelligence and respond to that and say, well, blah, 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 blah. And then I could go back to being whatever this is and me speaking for these programs saying, well, blah, 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 and think. And I'm suggesting very strongly that this happens to people. Without, and even after I said it, is they automatically reverse the roles I'm playing. If anybody out there or here in person, that doesn't seem to be the danger in person, but if anybody hears any sarcasm, any cynicism, any hostility of any sort on these programs, then you're simply listening in with the wrong headphones. More directly to the little area that we were tromping toward. The showing of these programs, like almost any other thing in life, that involves any group of people, it will get responses. And again, it's not singular to this, as I will immediately go into a more common example. But anything that seems to stir up an audience, that seems to require an audience, such as these being shown on in different areas, it will elicit, if it survives, if it has any lifespan, it will begin to get responses from the audience that are impertinent to what it's intending to do. What it is doing, what it's intending to do. And I repeat, it is not some singular affront that we're having to suffer. It is true anywhere. It is not unique. An obvious, or it should be, example, how about this? Religion. Not in particular one, just religion, priests, those who run religions, the best known, just good old down-home, in-the-city institution religions, they are, from certain quarters, continually attacked for being the merchants of evil. Singular priest, the head of some church, a pope, the head rabbi, I assure you, will get letters, he'll get comments, specifically pointing out that you do not fool me. But what you're doing, you're working directly behind the scenes, but you're working for evil. There are people attacking charitable institutions and saying, ha, I am not deluded. There's no doubt about it. You people are not doing good work. You're doing so-and-so. And then come up with some great conspiracy about what this is all about. So I do not want your attention just to stay on this, because it's no sign that we're being mistreated doing this. But it's any time you have an audience for anything, and I don't have to leave it there. It just gets a little more vague. We could take sports. I assure you that the owners, the TV stations that play it, but let's just say the owners of professional football teams, baseball teams, they get letters. They, of course, call them crank letters of some kind, but they get letters attacking, saying, wait a minute, this is not what it appears to be. Anytime you have something that is going to begin to create, I said an audience, and I want to shift it a little bit for you, a kind of community involvement. That is, you've got groups of people somewhere, sports fans taking the showing of NFL quite seriously. And I don't mean that they're insane. I'm just talking about the ordinary people who make some effort to sit down and watch the games every Saturday during the season. All the way from that to people who will make it a point, when possible, to be home to see some minister that's on television. And, of course, in person. But I was doing this on the basis of receiving afar comments, such as written comments. Now, anytime this happens, and you've got everything from the church to a professional sport to an apparent entertainment program, even on television, that seems to have some intention. They either state the intention or the middle of the bell curve. Ordinary people, if they were asked, they would say, well, the intention of what they're doing is obviously such and such. They will get responses. Remembering, if it's alive enough, we're not talking about some ephemeral anomaly. But if it's an intricate part of life enough that it survives and creates an audience, then it creates a kind of community. It has a following of some kind, and they do not have to be fanatical at all. But once that is done, you are then going to get responses outside, you might say, the main audience, the mainstream of the audience, responses that are just impertinent to what's going on. I assume the setup's clear enough, such as some big religious leader, unless we're not attacking him, just whoever you want to pick out, a guy that not a blemish on his record, and he shows up and he seems to be doing good, and he says he does charitable work, and nobody has any dirty pictures on him, no blackmail, and yet he will receive letters. He'll receive responses saying, you don't fool me. Or else he'll receive responses, not just to attack him, he may receive responses, you know, saying, I've been watching your program, and what I really need is some advice, how that I can open a secret Bahamian bank account, and I know that you can help me. And, you know, movie stars, just famous people that have nothing to do with religion or sports, just famous figures. Surely you can sense the reality of this if you've never heard about it, but movie stars, somebody, they'll get requests, they'll get letters that have nothing to do with acting, that have nothing to do with them. Political figures. It is a fact of life. It is a way in which the system of civilized, the secondary world, the civilized world of man is arranged. Now, it would be easy enough for an ordinary person, if you heard all that and know it's a fact, just that part, it would be very easy and nothing unusual to dismiss it as being some sort of lunatic fringe, to dismiss those who would respond in a way. Not just sit back at home, let's go back to TV and watch some program, all the way from a minister to a sports or to an information program. Not just sit there and whine, but go to the trouble that they now try to be part of an audience, part of a community to this show, to actually take the time to write. But it's absolutely impertinent to what's going on. Now, it would be easy enough then for the mainstream, the middle of the bell curve of those that feel like they're part of the community, even from afar, the audience for this, if you heard this, to dismiss them absolutely as, I guess, charitably speaking, the lunatic fringe. But just to, you know, say, well, talk about stupidity. If you heard some specific example that some famous actor was written and somebody saying that how much they enjoyed the person's movies and they'd fought their career, and that my sister-in-law is dying of cancer, and would you please, I've sent a handkerchief that she wears sometimes, would you please pray for it and send it back by Thursday? Well, it would be easy enough for you to say, well, that's just absolutely insane. They're either insane, or that just shows, again, the absolute stupidity of humanity. Ooh, tut-tut. Tut-tut. There is an unstudied, right up until now, area of quite individual significance within what I'm talking about, within a larger kind of citywide institutional level that I have been trying to sketch up until now. But there is a very specific individual, and then even worse, significance to this. First off, consider that beyond any primary hormonal-based level of attraction that draws people together. It draws them together to meet, all the way from out at football games. You should know that people do not simply go to a football game to see a football game. People do not go to a concert just to see a concert. People do not go to a religious meeting just for spiritual fulfillment. It's just simply they do not. Not entirely. We'll start off easy enough. There is a hormonal basis that draws people together, that creates an audience. And it is a small step, I want you to see, I'm not trying to play with words, but it's a small step from calling something an audience to a feeling of community. In a broad sense of the word, that if you go out to a college football game, let us say, and if you have no partisan loyalties, but here it is between the University of X and the University of Y, Texas and Oklahoma, the crowd over here that's supporting Oklahoma in the East Stands, they're not just an audience to the game, they're there on the basis, partly, of a hormonal attraction to be part of a community. And hence, again, if you're outside it or you're part of life's critical, sarcastic little spots in its own body, you might look upon it all and say, well, what a bunch of dunderheads. I am too intelligent for that. I'm going home and watch PBS or read a book. That's just insanity. That's not that far removed from the Roman games. These people are just barely civilized out there screaming and playing and music and waving banners. You know, go Oklahoma. You know, who the hell cares? That's easy enough to say. Because they're not there just for that. Or if you're an atheist, it's easy enough to look at a religious revival. Look at hundreds of thousands of people there in Rome. And some man dressed up in a funny thing, waving his hands and people swooning and cheering. And you think, you know, what in the world is going on? Part of it. Part of it without any doubt. Even the city now would almost recognize this. You want me to play the city part and say, well, yes, there is some statistical basis in sociology, I'll be, to lend some credence to what you say. Not enough to, you know, blah, 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 come to any conclusion. In part, all of these examples of there being an audience for anything, part of it is a hormonal draw to form a kind of physical community, a pack. That is what an audience is, if you actually have an audience, not just a random mob. If there is actually an audience, and they paid their money, figuratively at least, and they, I'm saying, here they are, the Rolling Stones, or here it is, Dwayne Eddy, here it is, the Rolling, Frank Sinatra, there is, in a sense, a community already established. But if it's just a bunch of people, just random people, and there's a stage set up in the field, and just people coming by, and they suddenly hang around, and finally, the guy goes out and checks the mic, you know, testing 1, 2, 3, and they all stop for a minute. And they say, and here it is, the guy you've been waiting for, Guido Grunt Rapper. And he comes walking out, and you got no audience. They don't know who he is. I say that nobody does, or even one or two do. They weren't expecting him. They didn't know. They weren't prepared to hear whatever it is he does. That's not an audience. But if they say, and here they are, you know, the Rolling Stones. And by the time the announcer can say it, the audience is already responding. In a sense, it is already a community. Or if it's a football game, you don't have to wait for the announcer to call off the names of every one of the players on the team of the University of Oklahoma. Just as soon as the announcer comes on, you hear it going in and says, and now we're getting ready to announce the players. And let's say that they're the visiting team, and so the Oklahoman fans know that they're going to be announced first. Before they can even call out number so-and-so, they already respond, because in a sense, an audience is a community. It is a group that has been drawn together way beyond any kind of thought, in part. A hormonal attraction not unlike, need I point out the obvious, a gang of dogs hanging around together. It's not unlike it. It's not theory, as I said, even medicine, sociology, psychology has some knowledge that can be proven. All you got to do is variation of my frontal lobotomy and what it'll do for one's personality and one's religious interest, you know, driving the Phillips up through here. You can extract certain hormones from the human body and you've got instant hermit. So there is no doubt. I assume you know that. But Here is what has never been said on this planet. This is the part that I'm trying to get us to. Beyond all of that, and it is real, it is inescapable, it's not right, it's not wrong, it's not even generally noticed, but it is inescapable that any time there is a group coming together, an audience, which is a form, not an audience, not just a random mob that just stopped by, but an audience that actually came to see something, and you had some idea what it was, or thought they did, or they'd sit there and watch TV. A guy and two or three of his neighbors would get together on Saturday, and they turn on a particular station at a time because they know it's the NFL today. They know what they're there for. So it's more, an audience is a form of a community. The people have been attracted, in part, by inescapable hormonal drives. But we're not talking about dogs and wolves. We're talking about humans. Now, here is the part that has never been studied. It is beyond local analysis. But beyond all of that, they unknowingly also try and form a unified intellectual second body. They are attempting to form another community, not a physical community, not the hormonal community, not the hormonal community of drawing physical bodies there together at somebody's house to watch a football game or to drag them all together to come out and see the Stones, or to come out and see a Billy Graham. Not just that, and it doesn't stop it, and it's not in place of, but in addition to that, they are being drawn together to try and form a unified intellectual community. This in spite of all the claims, even the general street-level appearances, that there is some stable, unified, intellectual body to all groups, to all communities. In spite of that appearance, men unknowingly know that all of these communities, all of these gatherings, do not have a stable, factual basis. All right, no matter how stable, no matter how even historically ancient and established may appear to be some community. Let's take the church, any church, but let's call it the church, you know, the Western world or the world. The church would appear in the Western world, would appear to be very stable in all sorts of senses, very rich, widespread. The church does not set up tents on street corners. The church would appear to be a living example of stability, uniformity, with historical precedent. But even the church, to use that example, even the church has to continually define itself, redefine itself. It has to continually restate its purpose. It has to continually restate and assure itself, anyone who listens, of the unified struggle in which it is engaged to fulfill its aims. And all the while, men unknowingly know that such a belief is ill-founded. And I say unknowingly, no, we're back to those of you that are going to have to be able to listen quicker than the words. Unknowingly, no, simply infers the fact that within a polarized world, if something was true, such as if something was operationally complete and fulfilling, generally called true. If it were, then the thing would not have to do what I just described. That is, the thing, the activity, the institution would not have to continually restate its name, redefine its purpose, reassure everyone that we are of here in the community of a like mind, of a single purpose, and we are on the track. We are diligently working in that direction, In other words, it would not have to continually restate what kind of guy it is. It's no sarcasm. It's no attack on the church or any guy. But those of you that can hear, you must know what I mean by saying they unknowingly know. Not that it helps the people involved, but I'm saying that for you. That operationally you can see that something is amiss from a more complex view. Or else something would state its purpose, assuming it needed to once. Let's assume everything needs to at one time say, all right, here's the kind of guy I am. Whether it's an institution, a religion, a nation, a culture, or a person. Let's assume that for whatever reason, that one time everything, from nations to individuals, must say what kind of guy they are. And inherent in that is to say what your purpose is, and that as soon as you get through saying what kind of guy you are, you're off to see the wizard. You're off to work on it. You do hear that if that were a complete statement of reality in any situation, then each person, assuming they had to do it once, or each institution, each community, they would do it once, and that's it. Because if that were a plenary exercise of their understanding, their intentions, their drives, why come back? What else is there to say? Nothing. It's not that any institution or ordinary people are incorrect or wrong, or that they should be held up to some sort of ridicule. But you should see. You should be able to get a glimpse of where I'm trying to drag your attention. That no matter what the institution seems to be, no matter what the community seems to be involved with, it is not stable, it is not of a unified mind, it is not of a singular purpose, in spite of the fact, and this finger is not signifying any form of ridicule, we're not about to go, aha. It's not that. It's just you have got to see, if you're going to see any of this, that all institutions will state right out front, at the head of their brochure, in certain words, not these, but they're stating, we're so-and-so, and we know what we're doing. Because that is one of the unspecified definitions of an institution. Nobody's going to join a church or political party that, you know, they announce the name of it, and right under it, their slogan is something such as, the party that doesn't know what they're doing. Or the religion that doesn't know right from wrong, up from down, and hello, you have a turnip in your pocket. Nobody's going to pursue it. The tacit slogan, credo, subtitle of all religions, all institutions, all communities, everything that will drag a person in, all the way from you buying your ticket to Rolling Stones, row 7, seat so-and-so, show start, show time, 10:30. This is a receipt for 1750 or whatever. That is not simply a receipt for you paying. That is also a statement that you're going to enjoy yourself. It is the slogan. It is the tacit statement that we know what we're doing. It's not a ticket when you pay your $17.50 or whatever it is that says, this will get you in the Rolling Stone concert, and you know, the Stones may show up, and they may put on a show that you enjoy, but you know, who knows? You know it's not true. But then, withal, they do not state the contrary, because it goes without saying. That's what I want, was the point I was trying to get you to see right quick, was that in spite of, no mockery, no sarcasm, but in spite of the fact that this is the way that life must be arranged, if for no other reason, just to keep things going, just so she can get through the day in some reasonable length of time, just so the Stones go to all the trouble to show up, and then they don't have to come out and do a 2-hour preface about, well, you know, I'm not sure we're going to make it, or the Pope has to show up and says, all right, I was going to talk to you about something, but let me tell you, I've thought about this, and on the one hand, you know, this, and on the one hand, that, you know, suddenly you think, hey, for a religious leader, we've got an attorney. You know? If for no other reason, just for everyday efficiency, you, all institutions, all communities, all groups of people that have an audience, all groups that make up an audience, they operate on the basis that it is certain what this is for, and it is certain, not that we're succeeding right this minute, but it is certain that we know what we're after. We're here to be entertained. We're here to be informed. We're here to watch a football game. And we know what it takes to get there, so by God, we're all in this together, and even if I'm just a passive observer. At least I know what's coming up. I know what they're going to try to do, and I'm going to try to have fun. I wouldn't have shown up. In spite of that, everyone unknowingly knows that the basis, the belief that, yes, the people involved, including us, the audience, the community, I know we all appear to be of a like mind, that we know what's going on, and yet everyone unknowingly knows that's not true. And they know that on the basis that they will put up with people describing continually, well, let me tell you why we're here. That's the only reason they will tolerate a continual retelling of, well, I'll tell you what kind of guy I am, whether it's coming from an individual or an institution. They tolerate it because they must do it. It is another form of a tacit contract between everybody that you have got to continually restate who you are, what you're up to, and that, yes, by God, I'm working at it. No doubt about it. If there's any doubt, hold on to your knickers. That was a dramatic piece of probably useless business. On the basis of all that, could any of you see this? Right here is the foundation of the great mistrust of so-called cults. Now, forget anything else a cult may do, whatever ordinary people mean by that. They could be real ugly people and dress in tacky clothes. Beyond all that, this distrust throughout history of cults, fringe communities. Would you like to have a different view, a more piercing view of what this, on which this is based, what it comes from? The great distrust of what appears to be a cult, just from anybody's definition, not mine, just ordinary definitions of a cult, is that everyone does seem to be of a like mind. Think about that. The community. One more time, let me repeat. Get past if it's some cult dressing funny and doing things that culturally would strike you as being too unusual. Forget that. That may be true and it may not be. I'm telling you the basis of this historic institutional genetic distrust of cults, which is forms of fringe communities. It is because they do seem to be of a single mind, of a unified purpose. Of course, built into that is another form of efficient justice that you might note in this whole situation is about, if I wasn't going into tonight, of a wide spectrum about just in the ordinary sense, going from institutions or communities that seem to have something resembling or something more of a unified purpose or a singularity of mind, and those that less have a less, going just through a continuum. One end talks more about who they are and their purpose than the other end. It's all a graduation, that you might consider that. It's part of what cults do, and it's part of what less cult-like activities do. But be that as it may, when the main community anywhere, whether it be religious, sports-wise, and it's not just religious, by the way. Can any of you remember when the National Football League began to take notice of the Canadian Football League when they tried to bring it south? They treated them as heretics. If any of you didn't remember, just so that you don't think this is limited to religious matters, they treated this upstart league as though they were a cult. And the more that you're outside the main community, the Canadian Football League, they had to present what appeared to be, albeit rather ephemeral, they didn't last, but they had to present what seemed to be a very strong advance guard with a singular purpose that, well, we're going to, I don't remember what it was, but something along the areas like this. I may be making it up, but it wouldn't be far removed from what they would have done, that they had to announce, our purpose is this, to put the excitement back in football. Whereas if you ask the National Football League, if you ask the church, if you ask an institution that was already well into place, they don't have to be that specific. But the more they seem to be a cult, the more they're outside the main community, the more they seem to know at one level, the more they give the appearance of being single-minded, That is part of the distrust, to say the least, of what, from the general community, whether it be sports, religion, politics, or what appears to be cults. Think about that. There is, even below this, I was going to try to get into the individual aspect of this to wrap it up. There is this that men, I'll say again right quick, unknowingly know that groups cannot, that groups should not be of a single, stable, unified mind. Nobody thinks about it. Nobody can analyze it. It would be to no purpose. And all factual claims notwithstanding. Again, I point out unknowingly know this, because how else would you explain that men tolerate what I've just described? That they will say that if there's any validity to any community, any institution, like a church, a political party, a nation, then part of it has got to be on the historical basis that the institution has survived. It has persevered attacks, onslaughts, criticism, and it has held up the test of time. And it now presents to all reasonable, for all reasonable purposes, it represents now some specific, stable purpose, some endeavor on humanity's part. And yet men unknowingly know that that is not so. Or else, why would they tolerate these same institutions having to continually go, let me tell you what kind of guy we are. Let me tell you what kind of guy we are. Here's a brochure. Here's our new brochure. And it's something that's thousands of years old or hundreds of years old. It's something that seems to be, by factual claims, it seems to be beyond any question as to what its purpose is. And it's unified within reasonable limits. It's unified. The community's unified. Efforts to achieve the goals. And yet they have to continually redefine themselves, reannounce what their name is, or to say we're the new improved version of the church, or we're the big, new, brighter, larger, more for your money, so-and-so political party. If what I'm saying were not operationally so, that men unknowingly know that the beliefs that institutions, that historically well-grounded communities, if they didn't know that they were not stable, they are not of some unified mind or of a singularity of purpose, they didn't know that, how would they tolerate them having to continually dance, to sing, to hand out brochures telling you again and again who they are and what they're up to? Now, would you care to apply? Oh, I hope we're not going to do this. You mean break our fingers? No. Would you care to apply all this individually to one person, to you? Could you apply this to one man's individual personality? One man's individual personality / intellect. Inside of one human nervous system at the brain level. If you can see this, it then becomes as though each person is their own cult. Truly, operationally, truly, that they become their own cult. Think about it. At the ordinary level, each individual person, they remain extremely defensive. I'm just referring back to what we were already talking about on an institutional level, on a level apparently out there. But each person, just an ordinary, sane, can be very successful, or just ordinary, middle class. But each person is as though they are their own cult, because, you can observe this, you know this already, each person is continually and extremely defensive. It's even a sign at city level of a healthy ego, a solid personality. You don't have to be a fanatic and fight every time that somebody gives you the bird on the highway. But a man, a reasonably intelligent man, is going to be defensive enough of his own talents, his own opinions, his own insights. He will be continually defensive of himself. He will be continually restating the singularity, the certainty of his goals. Just ordinary people with their ordinary goal in life, even if they just seem to have made up on the spot, they will stick to it. They'll tell you what their interest in life or what their specific, tangible goals are. They will reaffirm them. They'll say, oh, yes, no doubt. They may not, by ordinary definitions, be lying to you and trying to blow smoke in your ear about, well, how close I am to being world famous or how close I am to being a millionaire. But I'm telling you this, I work 70, 90 hours a week. I am working at it. They continually reaffirm the singularity and the certainty of their goal. Whether they seem to try and fool you or themselves about how close they are, or whether they freely admit, well, I'm not there, I don't know whether I'll make it, but there's no doubt about this, I know where I'm going. I know what it is I want. That's not a cult. That's not an institution. It is above all, you could say, and this fits into ordinary contemporary thought in the city from their own view. But all of this is above all in an individual attempt, at an individual level, it is an attempt to present the appearance of a unified, stable community. In this case, the community is you. That we have a purpose. We're not meeting here at random. I'm not talking about us, I'm talking about up here. Your own neural system. It's as though you had some neuron somewhere that says, well, I guess the rest of you wonder why I've called you here together. Well, part of the reason they're down together, remember, is simply on the basis of hormonal attraction. The same way that your liver attracts certain hormones that they all get together and perform liver-like functions. The brain draws in the right kind of hormones, the right kind of enriched blood, and the neurons get together that, yes, all right, we're here to be a community of thought, community of brains. Why else would we be here? A unified, a stable community. With a purpose, to be a brain, to be a liver. Above all, a man's personality, the way it presents itself to the world, the interaction between people, is cult-like. Or, in a broader sense, it is community-based, that we're not only here attracted on the quite tangible, physical, primary level of hormones being drawn together to the liver and the brain, in the same way that dogs and people are drawn together at a ball game, but on that secondary level, that we're here to provide to try and produce a new, a different level of a unified secondary intellectual organ, body, community. This, oftentimes referred to ordinary people, is my personality, my individuality. You could look upon this if you wanted to. A few seconds. You could look upon this kind of activity as being a private effort that you're trying to gain some release, some freedom, or at least you might say some sort of parole from the ordinary stranglehold of being a part of this attempted ordinary community at this level. The other one's of no great shakes, whether you're a part of it or not, because part of it you have got to participate in as long as you're alive and you got hormones working. But here is to have some form of private, if not release, weekend furloughs from this other attempt of everyone else trying to establish mechanically, just as mechanically as the flow of hormones, a solid, stable, secondary intellectual body out there. And it's somebody attempting to do this, they're trying to do it on their own. And it may or may not have any direct correlation to this attempted presentation of a unified community, intellectual community out there.
Tire Roots, March 27th, 1991.
And Kairut said, one three-dimensionally based father advised his equally captive son thusly, whilst abiding in space, don't try to spit on a tall person.
And Kairut said, when times required, one king would banish contentment.
No.
And Kairut said, there was this one fellow over in the city who had visions. He says that in an earlier vision of his life, he had... And Kairut said, there was this one fellow over in the city who has visions. He said that in an earlier version of his life, he had corns and blisters and sees his present state as a definite, however small, improvement.
And Kairut said, a cat that fights and plays with its own tail has the right makings to be a human in another life.
And Kairut said, once you know the real name of something, you can move on to something else. Okay, all right, I'll tell you. The real name of most stuff is connected to. Now, satisfied?
And Kairut said, those who argue and debate don't know what to do. That's why they argue and debate. Simple enough.
And Kairut said, this page was originally blank, and I see no present need to change its status.
And Kairut said, a helpful viewer writes in with this suggestion. He says, why don't I announce on the program that any of the Kairuts read that you don't like, I just made up.
And Kairut said, then there was this one king who'd never finish his sentences. He was king. He didn't have to.
No.
And Kairut said, at night, one guy tried to do bed check with his brain.
And Kairut said, there is an unrecognized sole source of stress in your city. But even were it identified, little would be the benefit.
And Kairut said, for his birthday, this one god received a bullhorn and a pocketbook of inspirational verse. He gazed upon these gifts with the sarcasm only a deity can muster.
And Kairut said, one guy says, why bother to talk to yourself unless you're smarter than you already are? And if you were that sharp, why would you even bother in the first place? He's jolly well jammed up the exit doors for some.
And Kairut said, in the ever-shifting world of the revolutionist, some old familiar facilities can suddenly become overused simply by being used again.
And Kairut said, men slay the maniacal in the hope they will rise again.
And Kairut said, earlier last year, the royal chemist damn near got the king to announce the following. That those who drink then do not think or either fight, should not be allowed to drink.
And Kairut said, in the competitions between light waves and sound waves, each team has its supporters here and there.
And Kairut said, obvious facts have two distinct features, called in some quarters dangers, but two bits lacks its former importance. The first is that they can be too obvious. The second is that they can be too factual. And lastly, once the substitute quarterbacks, there's that word again, number becomes familiar, it's easier to just leave him in the game. Thus concludes this treatise on obvious facts.
And Kairut said, track tip to keep one on track. No matter how the odds look at post time, put all your money on irony. Insider's additional advice. This does assume the track in question is in some circular configuration.
And Kairut said, one king said, I am my own ruler. And the people replied, we are our own people.
Yeah.
Then they both held up mirrors and said, "All is well."
And Kairut said, "This one people decided they wouldn't have a king. They made an immediate discovery. Deciding's one thing, doing's another."
And Kairut said, "One city's operational motto was, 'A man who's not sarcastic is not alive.'"
And Kairut said, "On some drier worlds, the seas roll and flow within the creatures."
And Kairut said, "Additional example of justice never seen. To the deaf, all paintings look better in the dark."
And Kairut said, "The leader of one family declared to the brood, 'The dumber you are, the better you look.'" And Kairut said, "The leader of one family declared to the brood, 'The dumber you are, the better you better look.'"
And Kairut said, "The brief but pointed letter from one concerned citizen to the city paper's editors read, in its entirety, as follows: 'Dear sirs, the Huns are at everyone's door.'"
And Kairut said, as he took his final breath, the Minister of City Feelings and Stability whispered to his gathered friends, "Glue and cement are lonely states of affair, necessary but lonely."
And Kairut said, "Some, oh no, not that, practical advice. If you're going to try to rip out your brain, start at one of the edges."
And Kairut said, "Standing tall amidst the collection of vino scraps, the late night musings, he clearly called, 'I am a great city. I cannot be destroyed, and none can breach my boundaries, but I am strangling in my own pollution.' Some present trusted this to be said metaphorically. Some had their doubts, and others thought they were in the wrong bar."
And Kairut said, "One guy who hands out pamphlets in the park professes to actually know why dogs pretend to like humans."
And Kairut said, "One viewer writes to say that although he's never been part of the culture crowd, after watching these shows, he's taken a look in that direction and has decided that the arts are life's way of smiling through man, or else it's personal form of ridicule."
And Kairut said, "Of course," said the man behind the counter, "the main thing always remains the same." Of course, he'd say that. That's why he's behind the counter.
And Kairut said, "Near the university's east gate, a chap with a snack in his hand confidentially noted that once he'd learned how to think, he'd given up reading books. Except for an occasional girly magazine."
And Kairut said, and in response, one man said, "I am absolutely appalled."
And Kairut said, "After several decades of a reign that included many triumphs, some setbacks, great progress and public joy, mixed with personal sadness and uncertainty, the beloved monarch was sitting by an open window, gazing across the warm spring lawn toward the nearby forest, and noted to his scribe, 'The squirrels know more than they're telling.'"
And Kairut said, "This one old guy would cheerlead and encourage himself with the exhortation, 'Go figure.' He continued to do this long after he could no longer figure out what it meant.
And Kairut said, the grimier the prize, the glitzier the contest.
And Kairut said, title of yet another yet-to-be-never-written book. Thoughts on everything are thoughts on anything.
And Kairut said, while a few of them were just sitting around gabbing and goofing, one god said that the best thing about being in their position was that you didn't have to call your mama. But then another one chimed in to say that he thought that was the worst part.
And Kairut said, query, what kind of revolutionist might seem hard and heartless toward secondary affairs? Answer, a revolutionist.
And Kairut said, the ruler of one kingdom announced his decision that the people not be allowed to be sad. In return, they decided he not be allowed to be king.
And Kairut said, people will pay to be entertained, but not informed. Wonder why? Well, I'll tell you why. Only one of the two is actually possible.
And Kairut said, in our continuing attempt to bring you nothing but the best in high-class entertainment, I mean information, we should be made privy to an extant variation of the previous Kairutal theorem, too witty. People will pay to be entertained, but not informed, unless you can trick them.
That concludes this talk. Be sure to visit us at jancox.com, where you can search through 3,000 talks for topics of interest, or just leave us a message.